There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
On a college campus.
You're looking at Act One, Scene One of a nightmare. One not restricted to witching hours and dark rain-swept nights. Professor Walter Jameson, popular beyond words, who talks of the past as if it were the present, who conjures up the dead as if they were alive.
The Union soldiers burned Atlanta. But I assure you they took no pleasure in their work. They were forced to it by a man they hated more than they could ever hate the rebels. An ugly, sullen, unbelievably brutal man named William Tecumseh Sherman. To give you a more comprehensive idea of this great hero, let me read you a few extracts from the diary of Major Skelton.
Flipping through a book.
The date is Tuesday, September 11th, 1864. The city was ours. There was no need to destroy aught save that which could be of use in the fight against us. But Sherman was drunk with victory. He himself started the awful fires. The fires that destroyed that great citadel of grace and beauty.
In the view of this man, Professor Samuel Kitteridge, Walter Jameson has access to knowledge that couldn't come out of a volume of history, but rather from a book on black magic, which is to say that this nightmare begins at noon.
The students file out of the lecture hall. Kitteridge remains.
Very vivid, Walter. You had me on the edge of my seat.
Thank you, Sam.
I begin to see why these lectures of yours are so popular.
Is that why you sat in?
Well, partially. Tell me something. Who is this Major Skelton?
Oh, just a lawyer who happened to enlist.
What regiment?
123rd Illinois Infantry.
Well, I must say, this diary of his is a fascinating document. May I see it?
Jameson opens his briefcase, takes out the diary and hands it to him. Kitteridge opens it.
I don't suppose I could borrow it.
I never lend books to absent-minded professors. Remember the last time?
Yes. You're right.
Anything wrong, Sam?
No. Could you come for dinner tonight?
Whose invitation? Yours or Susanna's?
Mine this time. Say, 7 o'clock?
All right.
Good.
Kitteridge walks off. That night, Jameson goes out of the house. As he walks, an old woman wearing a ragged fur coat watches him from behind a tree. Jameson heads toward a house across the street. As Jameson crosses the street, the old lady holds up her hand. A young lady rushes downstairs and opens the door.
Really, darling? Must you always be on time?
Always.
They embrace.
Please. Remember, you're a PhD.
Not yet, I'm not. There's a little matter of an examination, remember?
A technicality. Anyway, you're going to be a housewife.
The devil she is,
says Kitteridge.
I'm giving you my daughter's hand, not her brain. She's going to get that PhD if I have to
spank her, I know. Don't tell me you're the cook again tonight.
Indeed, and why not?
Well, I think it's time that I tried Susanna's cooking.
Don't worry, you will.
I'm sure. Well, shall we sit down?
M'lady?
Later, at the dinner table. Jameson gets up.
I take it back, Sam. She'll never be the cook you are.
He and Susanna walk to the living room. Kittredge follows.
What do you think you're doing, young lady?
Oh, I'll do the dishes later.
It's not the dishes I'm talking about. It's books and study. Upstairs. Besides, Walter and I have something to discuss.
You're not going to treat me this way, are you?
Worse. Who knows? You may have to support us.
They hug. And Susanna heads back upstairs. Kittredge fills two glasses from a carafe.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Sam.
Lighting his pipe.
Susanna's almost 30 years old.
And I'm almost 70.
Mm-hmm. My move, isn't it?
He lifts the cover off a chessboard with a game already in progress. Jameson joins Kittredge at the chess table. They look at each other across the table. Jameson moves a bishop. Kittredge examines Jameson's hand next to his own.
What's that for?
Look at them. Extraordinary, isn't it? They looked very much alike 12 years ago, those two hands.
Time marches on.
For some of us. Walter, tell me something, will you?
Of course.
How old are you?
44.
I seem to recall that when you applied for a post on the university staff, you listed your age as 39. That was, let me see, 1947, which would make you 51.
Come on, Sam. All right, I'm 51. Too old for Susanna, is that it?
In a sense.
Getting up and walking towards the stairs. He looks up the stairs, then turns back.
Walter, in 1947, I was 58. I had most of my hair, all my teeth, and hardly a wrinkle. Look at me now. In 12 short years, I've turned into an old man.
Looking in the mirror.
While you haven't aged at all.
It happens that way sometime.
I know, but why?
Don't ask me, Sam. You're the chemist. I teach history.
Yes, and you teach it very well. You know what the students say? They say it's almost as though you'd lived through the period you were discussing.
I try to make it interesting.
Fake it, you mean?
You could call it that.
Yes, that's what I thought. But somehow that didn't seem like you. You're such a precise sort.
He walks across the room and gets a book.
What have you got there?
A book of photographs taken by a fellow named Matthew Brady during the time of the Civil War.
He holds a magnifying glass over a photo.
Well, what is it? You look as though you'd seen a ghost.
Maybe I have. Walter, was your grandfather in the Civil War by any chance?
No.
Then I'd say we have something of a mystery here.
How so?
You made me curious about this Major Skelton today. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be interesting to see what he looked like, so I went through my Brady pictures, not really expecting to find anything.
He puts the book down on the table.
These are three of Sherman's staff officers. The one seated at the table is identified as Major Hugh Skelton.
Jameson takes the magnifying glass and looks at the photo.
That picture was taken almost 100 years ago.
Skelton bears a strong resemblance to Jameson. Jameson puts down the magnifying glass.
You shouldn't have kept that ring, you know. It's a dead giveaway.
What are you getting at, Sam?
Oh, come, Walter. You know exactly what I'm getting at.
Oh, you're joking.
Getting up.
Just because I happen to look like somebody in a photograph.
And happen to be wearing the same ring and happen to have the same small mole on the left side of your face?
Jameson facing away from him.
Walter, you and I have been very close for 12 years. Tell me the truth. You... You are that man in the photograph, aren't you?
Jameson turns around to face him.
Yes.
Kit Rich slowly backs up and sits down.
I've suspected a long time, but it seemed fantastic.
It is.
Yes. How old are you, Walter?
You wouldn't believe me.
I can believe anything now.
All right. Let's say that I'm old enough to have known this gentleman personally.
Pointing to a bust of
Plato. But that was over 2,000 years ago.
Jameson nods.
I knew you wouldn't believe me.
No, it isn't that. It's 2,000 years. How, Walter? How? In heaven's name, Walter, this is what mankind has been dreaming of.
Sam.
Tell me the secret.
I can't tell you the secret, Sam. Because I don't know it myself. I was like you, Sam. Afraid of death. And when I thought of all the things there were to know in the miserable few years that a man had to know them, it seemed senseless. At night, every night, I dreamed, as you dream, of immortality. Only if a man lived forever, I thought, could there be any point in living at all. I talked to priests, philosophers. Then one day, I met an alchemist, told him these things. He said that he could grant my wish, only, of course, it would cost a great deal of money. I was desperate. I paid him his money and submitted to his experiments. I remember very little about it. I lay in a coma for many weeks, and when I revived, I was alone. The alchemist had disappeared.
Go on.
Putting his hand on Jameson's arm, Jameson stands up.
There's really very little more to tell. I thought, of course, that the experiment had failed because I didn't feel any differently. But then I saw my wife and my children aging, my friends dying. This was something that I hadn't considered, you see.
But surely there's some answer to that problem.
Is there? Think about it. I tell you that somehow I can stop you from aging. Where do you want to stop? At 30? Then you watch everyone around you grow old. At 70? Do you want to live forever the way you are now? Old, sick.
It's better than dying.
No. You're wrong, Sam. I was wrong. It's death that gives this world its point. We love a rose because we know it'll soon be gone. Whoever loved a stone?
I'm not a rose. I'm not a stone. I'm a man. Very old. And very frightened.
Of what? Death?
Yes, of death.
You're a fool, Sam. I want to die.
Then why don't you?
Because I'm a coward.
You?
I haven't changed, you see. I'm the same man I was. I was a coward then. I'm a coward now. I'm tired of living. In my desk, I have a revolver, Sam. And every night, I take it out and pray for the courage to pull the trigger. I can't.
You mean to say that you survived over 2,000 years without an accident, without being wounded?
Some people are lucky that way. They go through life without ever breaking a bone or seeing the inside of a hospital. Oh, I've been close to death. Many times. But never close enough.
Kid Rich sits back down.
Thank you.
For what?
I thought if a man lived forever, he'd grow wiser. But that isn't true, is it?
You just go on living, that's all.
It must be lonely.
Jameson sits down across the table from Kittredge, grabs his pipe.
I suppose you've been married several times.
Yes.
How long with each woman, Walter? 10 years? 15 years?
I see. Sam, I tried to resign 6 months ago. You talked me out of it. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I knew Susanna was falling in love with me. And I knew what would happen. It's happened before. A few years of happiness, and then I tried to warn her. I did everything in my power to discourage her.
Except tell her the truth.
Now, how could I do that? She'd have thought I was mad.
Then why didn't you leave?
Because by then it was too late. I was in love with her. I need her. Everything is against it. All my reason and experience. But that doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter.
It does to me, Walter. I can't let you marry my daughter.
And why not?
Entering the living room.
Well, come on.
Your father seems to think I'm too old for you, darling.
That's the silliest thing I ever heard of.
Good. Then you'll marry me. Tonight.
I think you mean it.
I do. You go upstairs, pack your prettiest things. I'll pick you up in 15 minutes.
She glances at her father.
But...
Go. Go.
She heads upstairs.
I'll tell her.
She won't believe you. Nobody would. You won't believe it yourself by tomorrow morning.
He walks out the door. Crosses the street. Returns to his house. Sits at his desk. Takes out a pad of paper. And his gun. Picks up the gun, then puts it down on the desk. Grabs a pen.
Hello, Tommy.
He looks up. He turns his desk lamp to illuminate the old woman in the fur coat sitting in a chair.
Who are you?
She stands up.
Don't you recognize me, Tommy?
He shakes his head.
Look hard. Look into my eyes. You called them the most beautiful you'd ever seen once a long time ago.
Now they are sunken in her wrinkled face. He stares at her.
I'm afraid you're making a mistake.
No, Tommy.
My name is Jameson. Professor Walter Jameson.
Don't pretend. I know who you are.
And who am I?
She turns and heads toward the door. Turns on a light switch.
You're Tom Bowen. My husband.
Your husband?
He stands up.
My dear woman, perhaps if you'll tell me who you're looking for.
Oh, stop it. I saw the picture in the newspaper announcing your engagement. I had to come to see if it was true. It is. I can't explain it. I only know it's happened. I've grown old, and you haven't. Now you're going to marry someone else and leave her the way you left me.
Oh, Lorette.
He sits down.
Lorette.
Puts his hand on his forehead.
I can't let you marry her, Tommy. You're mine.
She takes the revolver.
Lorette.
Tommy, it's wrong. You can't go on hurting people.
Kittredge gets up. The old lady goes out. Kittredge goes out. The old lady walks to the sidewalk. Kittredge runs across the street towards her.
What is it? What's happened?
She turns and walks away from him. Kittredge runs up to Jameson's front door. Opens the door and goes in. Enters the darkened room.
Walter?
Hello, Sam.
I thought I heard... Are you all right?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Either way, you'll be rid of me.
What do you mean?
I mean, I've come to my senses. At last. Tell Susanna that...
Kittredge reaches toward him.
No, stay away.
But Jameson pushes him away.
You're hurt.
Jameson sinks into his chair. Kittredge turns on the light switch.
I'll call a doctor.
No.
Holding the headset down on the telephone.
Your hand.
Jameson pulls his hand back. Jameson's shirt is stained with blood.
It's happening.
What is it? What's happening? Oh, my God.
Jameson's face, now wrinkled, his hair now white and thin.
Nothing lasts forever. Thank God.
Kittredge stares silently and raises his hand towards his own face. Jameson stands up. Leaning on the desk, he walks around, hunched over, and... collapses to the floor. His face now withered. Susanna runs out of the house and across the street. Jameson gasps for breath.
Dad! Walter!
Kittredge jumps up, turns off the light, and rushes out of the house.
Go home, Susanna.
That son was a shot. Walter's hurt.
Please, Susanna, go home.
Walter?
She runs in.
He's gone.
Where?
I don't know, my dear.
His clothes?
Shoes. Trousers. Shirt. Jacket. Ashes.
Dad, what is that on the floor?
Dust. Only dust.
They walk out. Kittredge looks back and shuts the door.
Last stop on a long journey. As yet another human being returns to the vast nothingness that is the beginning. And into the dust that is always the end.
Credits. Directed by Tony Leader. Written by Charles Beaumont. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Kevin McCarthy, Edgar Stelly. Also starring Estelle Winwood, Dodie Heath. Director of photography, George T. Clements. Production manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art directors, George W. Davis, William Ferrari. Assistant director, Edward Denault. Casting, Mildred Goose. Film editor, Bill Mosher. Set decorations, Henry Grace, Rudy Butler. Sound, Frank Milton, Gene Valentino. Makeup, William Tuttle. Animated title by UPA. Copyright 1959 by Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio description by Lou Lasher.